Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Casey Lewis, who is the founder and CEO of Rhino Digital Media. Prior to his role at Rhino, Casey was in charge of the sales team nationwide for AT&T Yellow Pages, which would eventually become YP.com. Today, we're going to be discussing Casey's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today, Casey.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to go.
Perfect. So to get started, let's dive into a couple of questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
I think probably what motivates and or inspires me is the idea of doing things on my own as opposed to doing things for others specifically. And then being able to share that with people in a way that's meaningful, that's helpful. And you're able to gain relationships really is what it's about. In my story, when we talk about it a little bit, you know, spending all those years with the once great and proud AT&T, that's not the one that is there today, by the way, it's the original.
That was
one of the things I think that I enjoyed more than anything was we were really literally friends and neighbors with every small business owner in the country.
So cool. Yeah, it's so interesting to see how digital marketing has evolved, because that is one of the things that kind of stands out in my mind as the start of digital marketing was, you know, having a directory listing in the Yellow Pages.
Oh, yeah. The Yellow Pages were the original search engine. I mean, there's no question about it. And I think that when you look today, and many of the customers in our clients that I talk to today, we make reference to that it's just the Yellow Pages on steroids. And there's a lot of real advantages to that, things that you were limited with the print document that you could not do, mm-hmm. that you can now do with a dynamic online presence. But yeah, that's where it really started. And that was, you know, the concept of inbound, the concept of content marketing. It all really is based on the original McCoy, the Yellow Pages, that at one point in time was referred to as directional advertising. And then of course, HubSpot kind of coined the cool term inbound marketing and all that, but it's all the same thing. It's finding that customer when they're looking for you and at that very point that they have a need and then filling it and being right there front and center.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, obviously that's how you got your start in digital marketing. Talk about your story about starting Rhino Digital Media.
Yeah, it's an interesting story because Rhino Digital Media originally was just Rhino Media, and it was actually my wife's agency. It was a pretty typical traditional advertising agency dealing in print work and in media buys. Mm-hmm. But way, way back then, I was coming up in the Yellow Pages organization, and the Yellow Pages had just gone to the point of being able to print full color advertisements, sort of kind of magazine style. Mm-hmm. And a company out of San Diego, California had come up, and they were called Image One, and they had pioneered these really elaborate and very nice ads that they could get prepared for the clients clients in those days were Yellow Page advertisers. Anyway, what that blossomed into this big opportunity because the Yellow Page company itself couldn't do the ads. So we would do them. And then she had that going, and I went on with my career and ended up, again, overseeing nationwide all of it. And then as that started to just kind of collapse, and as I was dealing with a lot of executives over me that just couldn't see and couldn't fathom the reality that the Yellow Pages was going to fail and Google was going to come in and fill that void. So they didn't do enough. And in my estimation, I really took it personal because I felt like we let down the small business marketplace nationwide everywhere. All these small businesses were relying upon us. So then we let all these other people jump in. So in those days, it was Yodel, it was Reach Local. I forget all the names. Everybody was now jumping in to fill and grab those clients. Mm-hmm. But what they weren't doing is they weren't providing, in my opinion, that relationship that we once had. So it was all about software. It was all about knowledge-based articles and et cetera. So we put Rhino Digital Media together. I bailed. I took my money. I left. I retired and went and started Rhino Digital Media, which was, again, it was kind of my wife's company, but she was ready to get out anyway. And so I took my two sons, myself, we started it. We started bringing in a team of really good qualified people that can fit all the various individual functions that are necessary for a digital marketing agency to really be good.
Yep.
And we just started going to market. And initially I would blog it up about Yellow Pages and what the existing market was going to need to do to replace that once sort of stalwart of their marketing. And we started getting calls and getting, hooked up with different clients. We hooked up with HubSpot. We used HubSpot to as a source to bring a lot of different disciplines together in one place. That's kind of what HubSpot does. It's pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. And we just went for it. And it's funny because I don't even know if you realize this, Julia, but we now really have honed in the pest control industry.
And interesting.
Yeah, so subsidiary is Rhino Pest Control Marketing. And really the whole reason behind that is we like pest control people. They're nice, good, hardworking, business owners. A lot of times they're family owned, so we relate to them.
Yep.
It's really sort of recession proof, at least the residential side, because even with COVID, what we found was the market started going better because people were stuck at home and they're seeing their bugs and everything and they had to get those taken care of. Anyways, that's a long answer to your question, but that's how we really kind of came to be and how we have positioned ourselves in the industry right now as a HubSpot support mechanism, but now niche-based in pest control.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like there was a series of events along the way, really unique events that led to Rhino Digital Media coming together. So it's really, really interesting.
Yeah. I think that in my case, I'm an older guy. So I've been around a really long time and I have two younger sons. And even now I told you about my daughter, I've got a younger daughter. She is a little bit involved with the company, but she's doing her own thing. She just got mm-hmm. out of college. But what I think that's interesting is in our company, we're able to bring me, kind of the old guy that can talk to maybe some of the older business owners, and then help align that with the younger generation that's maybe doing the marketing internally in the company. And then I've got my sons that are in their 30s, so they're able to relate. And so we're able to kind of put that together where you've got maybe the visionaries at the top, but they don't want to sit there and learn software and deal with all the minutiae of putting it together, but they understand it. But then you have the younger group that, hey, they're into the software, they're into social media, they're into all this stuff, so they like to do it. So anyway, we try to bring that mix, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's definitely beneficial to have when it comes to sales. You know, like you mentioned, you're able to relate to a certain demographic. And then, you know, you've got your sons and you said your daughter is a little bit involved, but not so much, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So what do your sales efforts look like now? You know, how are you bringing leads into your agency to grow your agency?
So our sales efforts, we kind of have to walk our talk, right? Because this is what we sell and tell people to do. So we do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But I would say that if you look at, if I tried to maybe line it up as to what's working the best and what we're doing the most of, I would say that the two things that work the best, that promote and provide for us quality leads. We like to refer to them as SQLs or sales qualified leads. That means, you know, they're not calling just to get free advice or information. They're maybe really calling to see, what do you do? How much do you charge? Can we get it done? So we do a lot of content blogging, and we content blog with a strategy that's referred to as topic clusters. So I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, but when we, in the early days, I would just write blog articles all day long about the Yellow Pages and how it was not the way to go and you needed to find an alternative. And got many, many clients that way that would come through. We would have a couple of guides they could download, get them into a drip campaign that was mild mannered. I don't like the aggressive ones that are cookie cutter you see now. So that would really be, you know, blogging it up and now overlaying that with video. And then we're using a product called StreamYard for streaming video content. But it's content that's based on a calendar, that's based on a topic cluster. And we'll use blog articles, we'll use some video, some streaming, and get that out into the marketplace. Then we will do some of the more basic things. Like, for example, right now we're rebuilding our entire website and re-optimizing probably about 50 or 60 pages so we can get those pages, in addition to our blog articles and video and other content, mm-hmm. we can get that website optimized so it starts to show up for likely search for candidates that might be looking for our services. And that's an extremely important thing that we go through with most of our clients when we first talk to them, is their website and the pages and the content on the pages and whether or not they're optimized. And then what we finally do a lot of is email webinars. So we have a fairly substantial, if we talk pest control here for a minute, we have a fairly substantial email list that we've whittled through so that we are able to talk to about 15,000. So we'll talk to these people via email. We have created webinar series that we'll use, and we'll do these webinars based on the email conversations we're having. So, you know, every now and again, everybody's talking SEO, of course, then they're talking content, then maybe they're talking about just various topics related to digital marketing. So mm-hmm. we'll talk about it on email, set up a webinar, and all of those things. And we use HubSpot ourselves. So all of that stuff runs its way into HubSpot. And then through automation sequences, depending on what the trigger elements are, if that makes sense. So what it was that brought it into our system, it will trigger different things up to and including, hey, someone needs to call this person today because they're really hot to trot, or drop them into different sequences of content based on what we think their interest is and their spot in that buyer's journey, if you will. So that makes sense, Mari. I hate to just start throwing a bunch of terms out there.
No, that makes sense. And then, so with the webinars, are those pre-recorded webinars then that you will send them if they're interested in that topic?
So they're not they're getting there. So with their live webinars that I have been doing, that I'm trying to get better at, because I tend to go too professor on them mm-hmm. and go too high level and too much jargon. Mm-hmm. So what I've found is when we can do those in a manner that's just basic. Like if you, the term I will use with my team is we want this to be like, if you and I met in a bar, Julia, we're just sitting next to each other. And I said, hello, and how are you? And what do you do? And you asked me what I do. And I said, oh, you know, I've got a digital marketing agency. We work a lot of pest control companies. And you asked about any topics. What I want the webinars to be like is if we just had this conversation, just sitting there over a beer in a bar, just talking. Mm-hmm. And what I found initially was my webinars were just too scholastic, too academic. They were too like a classroom, boring. So now we've really tried to clean them up. And as we've done that, we have started slowly, but to use those as pre-recorded messages that we can send out. Our initial stuff, I just didn't feel good about it. I just felt like it was, you know, I don't know if you've ever watched yourself do a PowerPoint. It can be dang boring, you know?
Yeah, so, there's definitely an art to conducting a webinar for sure. And everything down to presenting the offer as well at the end, you know, building up that anticipation and, you know, presenting a final offer. There's definitely an art to it.
No, exactly. And so we're trying to find that mix, you know, between, you can go too far on the right with like Russell Brunson and his ClickFunnels. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah.
He has the perfect webinar presentation, and it's almost a little too much. You feel like you're watching Fox News, right? Oh, breaking news. And, you know, just hang around and we got this next. But you're absolutely right. The key to it, I think, is to truly provide information that people want to hear. You get them, like they talk about getting them leaning forward into the monitor.
Yeah.
You know, get them there. And you're right. Finish it with an offer that's going to provide them, whether it's a guide, whether it's, you know, let's get together for a meeting and do a review, whatever it is. If you're going to give them a book, there's lots of things that we can do, but you're absolutely right. That's an art form. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like the more you know, the worse you are. Because, you know, it's how do you take all of this? I've got 40 years worth of background. Yeah, how do I take all this and condense it into a 40-minute presentation with 20 slides? I mean, that's tough, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting. And so how often are you constantly, you know, tweaking and changing your email funnel? Because it can definitely get extremely complex once you start, you know, really customizing it for all the different stages of the buyer journey.
Well, yes. And so one of the things I like to teach my team, again, the value of where I came from before Google, before digital, I think it was a really, really great experience where I would literally, when I was a young man, I would go door to door calling up business owners all day, every day. We'd call mm-hmm. 3 to 5 businesses every single day for, you know, I did that for 12 years. So,
interesting.
So what happens is, and this is a concept I think that's been lost. So we break it down into, there are really 10 different types of buying customers.
Okay.
So what we are doing with our email, with our responses, is we are trying to break that down into who are they? You know, who are they? Is it a man? Is it a woman? Are they young? Are they old? Are they just kicking tires? Are they a money spender? And then we will create sequences or workflows that are really based on that information so that we can drive them. Ultimately, for us, it's all about getting a meeting. And in that yes. meeting, we're going to do a series of things to really, it's a goal setting meeting to find out essentially, do you really want to make any money? Are you ready to do the things that will take to make that money? Or are you just still thinking about it? So all of those avenues, when we break it down into those 10 different buying customers, mm-hmm. are designed to bring that person to that point in a different way, because it's kind of different strokes for different folks. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, we meet every Friday. We review our metrics on these things so we can see if we're making the grade or missing the point. So a fail is opt out. A success is fill out the calendar invite and let's get it together. And we're constantly doing that because it is very complicated. And then what happens is a customer will move from one point to another. You have to identify that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so interesting that you tailor it down to even if they're male or female. That's really interesting. So
no, and we have different content writers because I can say things to a 50-year-old man if I'm talking, if we're just, you know, in a conversation discussing business.
Yep.
And it's very, very different if I'm talking to, say, a 28-year-old brand new female marketing director. You have to be very thoughtful about who you're talking to. It's the same thing in writing. You have to write it in a way it's respectful, it's courteous. And then today, in today's day and age, especially me, I have to be very careful because all the political correctness and all the jargon, all that, I just don't even know it. I don't relate to it very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really careful of that because in today's day and age, you can offend somebody in the, you know, in just a second if you say even the wrong word. So we're very thoughtful, very careful about knowing who we're speaking to, and you can say the same exact thing to five different people, and you have to say it in five different ways, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's really, really interesting. Fascinating stuff. So what would you say has been one of the biggest overall challenges that you've had to overcome as you've been growing your agency?
So do you think, are you speaking maybe more agency related or me personally?
As you've been growing the agency, something that has been a challenge that you've had to overcome, it could be a personal challenge or it can be just a challenge that you've had to overcome within the business.
When I think of it that way, I can really, and this even goes way back to my days in corporate America. I think for me, the biggest challenge today that as an agency that we have faced, and it's with our own team, some of which are my own children,
mm-hmm.
is to get everybody to slow down and really learn what they're doing. Learn it well so that you can talk it and speak it to people in a conversation and not send them a knowledge base article link or a video or something. And then getting those people, they're younger people. I mean, probably 28 to 40, that mm-hmm. kind of range. So most of people working here, that's their age, is getting them to sit down and read and consume and think so that they can be an expert in an area, as opposed to, you know, listen to social media articles, listen to some influencer that may or may not truly know what they're talking about, and mm-hmm. then try to parrot that. So I know that sounds a little strange, but that really is what we want our agency to be, is loaded up with people that are helpful, that are unique, that will get on the phone with people that really know their stuff. And it's today's day and age, everybody just wants to do everything lickety split right now, hurry up. You know, I can just look at Google and answer them, as opposed to really truly becoming a subject matter expert on something. You know, mm-hmm. SEO is a classic example. Everybody thinks they know everything about SEO, but if you've ever talked to somebody about SEO, all it is, it's like, remember in college when you wrote that paper and they used to tell you, right? If you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you just baffle them with BS. And that's what all these SEO guys do. It's just like, so, okay.
Now just talking about jargon.
Yeah, I've listened to this for 20 minutes. I have absolutely no, it sounds cool. It sounds like you know what you're doing, but what would I do? How would I walk away from this and actually go apply something? Mm-hmm. And that's what we try to do. I want my guys to be able, like I said, I want them to meet you at the bar, say hello, talk with you, and you in your mind know, hey, this is somebody that really knows what they're talking about. I like this person. They seem passionate about what they're talking about. They seem knowledgeable. And mm-hmm. they seem like they're willing to help. They want to help. They don't want to just pass me off to the call center overseas and all that stuff. So that's really what my challenge has been. If you kind of look at that, in it's, we want to be a little more old school, old fashioned, and not all high tech, fast paced, you know, pass it on to the next touch kind of agency. And that's it kind of goes against the grain of what everybody else is doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's so important to really be, you know, just sharpening the axe, you know, staying current, first of all, with, you know, digital marketing, the industry changes so quickly. So you really have to stay current. And then also just really, you know, from a sales perspective, making sure you know your material inside and out so that you can be clearly communicating it. So it's almost like two things, you know, you've got to be practicing, you know, rehearsing what you're going to be sharing with your clients so that you know the material inside and out, and then also researching so that you're staying current.
No, exactly. And we teach a five-step selling process here internally and also to our clients.
Okay. And
the second step in that is what used to be called fact finding. Now it's needs assessment. Again, you can rename all this stuff, make it look more cool and modern. It's all the same stuff.
Yeah.
But to me, what they miss today, because everything is kind of scripted out, is when you go through that initial step of fact finding. So I'm talking with you in a conversational method, and I am just finding things out. And then the next step of that is the presentation stage, where we talk a little bit more about what we can do and why we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the young, I shouldn't always say young, but most of our team, where they struggle the most, is once you've gathered that information, and however you do it, in a notepad, mentally, whatever you do, mm-hmm. is how you then can take that information and play that back to the customer. So that it comes back in a way that whatever I'm telling you here, it's what you already told me. So I'm just answering what you said. And what I'm recommending here is what you told me you wanted to do. Was that or was that not actually what you wanted to do? As opposed to it's kind of like in today's day and age, it's okay, I go through the script, I check off all the boxes, I got that information. All right, let's move to the next step. But I don't know why I gathered the information I just gathered and how to use it in the next step, if that makes sense. So many of those things, again, those are all old school things.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this in 1979, and we would go through a very rigorous training where each one of those steps, you could not make the transition to the next step until you mastered that step. They literally would not let you. And if it didn't matter if it took weeks to make the transition from fact finding into a presentation, that's what you were going to stay there until you mastered it.
Interesting. So, you know, in the fact finding, you're uncovering, you know, what they're currently doing, any pain points that they might have, that sort of thing. And then when you move on to the next step, what you train your team, if I understand correctly, is that you should be then connecting the dots. So if they're saying, you know, they have difficulty in this area, you would tie in how this can address that challenge that they have.
That's exactly right. So if you look at it, so you go from fact finding, you transition into the presentation. The presentation, again, can be just a 2-3 minutes, just talking a little bit of an elevator pitch about who we are, what we do, and then transition that into the recommendation. And the recommendation can be very simple. It can be like, hey, Julia, based on what we were talking about earlier, you said this and you said that, and I was thinking we should do this and we should do that. We have the perfect solution for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it very difficult for a customer to object too much if all you're doing is putting into play what they've already told you. As you said, their pain points are this. So what's the solution to that pain point? What's mm-hmm. the solution to this pain point? And it needs to be done in a very conversational manner. And that's not an easy skill to master unless you're doing it a lot. And you really mm-hmm. have to. But once you get it and once it clicks, it becomes very easy. And then generally speaking, the only objection you're left with when it's time to make the close is going to be potentially a cost objection. And again, if you're any good, you'd be able to walk through a cost objection very easily, because you would have assembled in your fact-finding stage some you know, average cost per sale, some other information that's going to give you the information you need to very easily convey to that customer that, in fact, what we're going to do isn't going to cost you anything. It's going to make you money. We just have to get through these steps to get to that point, if that makes sense.
it makes sense. And I have a couple other questions. I think talking about sales is so interesting. But you know, tone is one thing that's really important. You know, a lot of I've heard people talk about, you know, salespeople are the happiest people, you know, and oftentimes the person they're talking to, especially, you know, if you're in a situation where you're doing like cold calling, you don't want to be overly just over the top. You know, your tone's important. Is that something that you guys teach your team at all?
Constantly. So, and here's the key. It's pleasant tone, but not phony. You can also right. be phony baloney, where it's like, you know, come on, tone it down a little bit, sweetheart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that what you're talking about really comes with, and it ties back to what I was saying about knowledge. When you're smart about what you're talking about, you do get excited genuinely, and you're pleasant and you're helpful. It's yeah. when you start having to go back in your brain during your conversation, oh, shoot, what was my answer supposed to be for this one? Mm-hmm. And what was I supposed to say? And so then you become scripted and phony. And so now you're having to push through, you know, trying to overcompensate. But tone is absolutely the number one. So I'll give you an example. Okay. We train a lot of our pest control clients, admin people that answer the phone, how to answer the phone. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is many of our pest control companies, we can up their sales revenues by not doing anything other than helping them get a better conversion rate. And they'll find that they're doing 8 or 9% conversion rate when the industry average is 30-40%. So if we go in and we can fix that, we can really gain a lot of trust with them right now.
Yeah.
And what you find is that's the main issue, tone. And then tone as the day progresses. And you can tell when you're, because we track these calls and listening to them. You listen to a call at 3:30 in the afternoon and it's getting close to quitting time. And I've been talking about bugs all day long and I'm burned out and I'm tired. The tone is totally different. And what we say to them is, look, you can feel a smile through the phone, just mm-hmm. like you can feel a frown through the phone. And I have a guide, and in there I put a section, and I can remember this as a young sales rep. You go out, and you probably don't remember anything about Yellow Page ads, but a big full-page Yellow Page ad, even in the early 80s, could cost $4,000 or $5,000 a month. Wow. So so when you got a guy committed to do that, you were very excited for him, and you know, that it was in fact the right thing to do, and they would get wiped out with calls and inquiries. But then they'd have some mean person answering the phone who was sort of not friendly. You could tell really would have rather you didn't even call. And so you talk about tone, we're talking about tone. It is so important. And when you take any business and you look at all of their leads and their cost per lead, and then you try to take that cost per lead and say, okay, if we apply this conversion rate to it, that equals our cost per sale. Mm-hmm. If you can get that conversion rate in the range of 50%, you will see a dramatic increase in sales revenues to almost any company you can do that with. Because when they really start looking, I will promise you what's happening in their business is their sales team is taking the cream off the top. And that's it. And they're looking for good leads, and they're not actually working the leads. They're not actually being friendly. They're not actually following up and providing all of that wonderful. And I don't call it service. Service is overused. I call it experience.
Okay.
The customer experience is what's going to drive new customers to you and new revenue. Anyway, that was a long way to answer that. But tone is without question maybe the single most important point or skill that a salesperson can have is their ability to be friendly, to be believed, to be persuasive, passionate, knowledgeable, all of those things. And those are rare people that can really do all that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. I really like that you guys focus on, you know, so many times in digital marketing, you know, agencies are focused on just driving leads and then that's it. So it's really cool that you guys are kind of like that missing link. And then on the other end, you're training the companies to really improve their sales and ensure that they are taking or getting the most out of the leads that are coming their way.
Well, yeah. And in doing that, what we're trying to do is build a friendship with the company. So we're working with them. One of the things that we have done, and we've pretty much offloaded most of these clients now, is I don't like to be a vendor. So in other words, if I'm working for you, Julia, I don't want you just calling me every week and saying, okay, what's this metric? And what's that? And what did you do? And, you know, how much? I want to work with you so that we can team together to determine, is everything we're doing working? If it's not, why not? What's working better than the rest? And educate you and get you involved in that process. Because what happens is then you will empathize with us as well when things aren't going good. In your eyes, we're trying as hard as we can. We're doing everything right out of the playbook. And we're just going to have to keep working at it. Mm-hmm. And you won't get that sort of relationship with a client if they don't feel comfortable. You know what you're doing and you're trying as hard as you can.
So you guys are really, you're really focused on working together, forming that partnership and really working together to create success within their company.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, my oldest son that actually worked with AT&T for a few years, his job in our organization is to do nothing but call people, talk to them and see how they're doing and fix problems. And then when we come to our weekly meetings, he will bring forth, hey, I talked to this person or that customer. Here's what they were thinking. Here's what they wanted.
So
and
cool.
we just do stuff. So they love that. And I can tell you, not too many people treat clients like that anymore.
It's true. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of another agency having one person who was responsible for, you know, just strictly calling, checking in, making sure that there's no issues. And if there are, ensuring that those are resolved right away, like proactively ensuring that they're happy with everything.
Exactly. And then what he'll also do is train them on any of the software products we're using or that we've recommended to them or they're using, because that will also become a problem. You know, you get all this cool software and you plug it into some of these companies and they've got it all and they're paying for it, but nobody's using it. Nobody's doing anything with it, right?
Yes. Yes. I think it's huge. Yeah. Offering training for software is so, so helpful, because otherwise it can be so daunting to learn a new piece of software.
Right.
Yeah. Well, time is just flying by here. You've been sharing so, so much helpful information about the sales process, which is fascinating. But we are now ready to move on to the fast five. So we have five rapid fire questions for you. So,
okay.
what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
So I'm going to show my age, but a book that I really love, and I really love this man, is by Zig Ziglar, and it's called See You at the Top. I have, you know, others that are more, say, current, but I really like that. I like who Zig is. I like what he promotes. He's a very, very smart guy, Southern guy. I don't know if you've ever listened to him. He's about as old school as you can get. If you ever have a chance, just listen to him. He's old school motivational speaker, very smart, and gives you a lot of good, useful, helpful information. In his case, See You at the Top is all about goal setting, following up, how you get from one place to another. He's got wonderful stories and wonderful examples. So I would say really that's my favorite book. I have others, but that's the one. And if you go get an audio file and you go listen to him, you'll crack up. This guy's really something to listen to.
Okay, great recommendation. And what does your morning routine look like?
So my morning routine is essentially get up, get to my desk, go through my calendar, make sure I know what I'm supposed to be doing, return all my messages. And then from there, I try to spend about 2 hours getting into content. So I like to do that in the morning because I'm burned out in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I do some content creation, content development. Then if we have a little later in that morning and we've just started this podcast, we've only actually got, I think, 3 episodes live. I will try to do a podcast episode that will be about 40 to 50 minutes.
Okay.
And then I'll try to do some video content that then goes to an editor trying to clean it up. And at the end of my day, I will, as I parlay into the afternoon, I'll end the day by really trying to get the next day or the rest of the week set up with other opportunities to talk to our clients or those individuals that are reaching out to me that want to talk about doing business with us. So those days go by pretty quick, as you can imagine.
Absolutely. Yes. And then, so next question, is there a CEO that you follow or study?
So not too much. I'll tell you what, I coached high school football for many years. And so coaches are some of the people I really follow. But if there were really a CEO in my time, it was Steve Jobs. I mean, and everything he went through. So, and the messages that I still use, many of the quotations that he's known for in my own business. So I would say it was really Steve Jobs. And then with Steve Jobs on the coaching side, and unfortunately both these guys are dead now, but was Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh was a football coach that managed and ran the San Francisco 49ers many years ago and turned them from a real joke into the class of the league. And he wrote a book called The Winning Edge. That's just fantastic. It's really nothing to do about football. It's everything to do about managing people, motivating people, putting a team together. It's a great, great book.
Interesting. Okay, great. And so what is your favorite online tool?
So online tool probably would be HubSpot. And
yeah,
only
so great.
Primarily because it's where we started. So when we started into the digital arena, we became a premier partner with HubSpot and we were selling their software. We still to this day have about 40 accounts that we manage the software for them. So I think from that perspective, it's probably my favorite only because it's the one I'm the most familiar with.
Yeah, I love HubSpot. It's so, I just love how it integrates with everything. It's so user-friendly. It's a great tool. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Wow, that's kind of a tough one. I think that when I started my career, what I probably wish I knew that I know now is how quickly things change and how much you have to stay up on top of what's coming as much as you are on top of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So being able to adapt, being able to transition, being able to learn and not being stubborn. And as I said, as you can imagine, from a guy that grew up in AT&T and working with a lot of those older executives in those days that could not fathom that it would be even possible for the once great Yellow Pages to actually just come to an end by virtue of Google. So I think, again, for me, it would have been to understand and be able to deal with change, rapid change and transition with it instead of fighting it all the time.
That's great insight. I really love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Casey. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show. I really enjoyed picking your brain and learning about your journey of starting Rhino Digital Media. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure on my part as well.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.